Ladies and gentlemen, sports fans alike, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago, one of the couple, two, three best podcasts around. So sit back, grab yourself a cold one and a Polish sausage, park your keister in the French room, and listen to Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose. As long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this snowy day in April in Chicago, we're going to be talking about the Blackhawks with their great luck in the lottery, talking a little Cubs baseball and a little bit of Bulls. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, the Rockford IceHogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford IceHogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You get to see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable prices. Unfortunately, the season has ended for the Blackhawks, but that should not stop you from heading on over to icehogs.com, getting yourself a hat, shirt, jersey, and signing up for the season ticket waiting list. It's so awesome. So check them out at icehogs.com. Tell them Swirsky Sports sent you. How is this snowy day doing for you, Alex?
Well, it's kind of sucky to see this all come down, but I'm pretty amped up today over a certain athlete that everyone is talking about, a Mr. Tiger Woods. I was watching the Masters all this morning, and I was ecstatic when he won, and I still can't believe that I'm sitting here in 2019, and he has come back, and he has won a Masters for the first time in a very long time after everyone said he was done. So yeah, I'm pretty happy right now.
I mean, it's true that the sport of hockey comes and goes with Tiger Woods.
You mean golf?
Sorry.
Unless he's Happy Gilmore.
Yeah, Happy Gilmore. With sport of golf comes and goes with Tiger Woods. It's true. There's people that are always going to watch it. They're going to have an audience. They're going to have these tournaments, whether or not he retires, whether he never wins another tournament again. But he elevates the entire sport. People tune in when Tiger is good because he brings in casual fans, people that aren't even fans. I'm not a fan of golf. I don't care about golf. I've never played golf. I don't care. But if somebody's like, hey, it's Sunday of the Masters and Tiger is leading, I'm like, I'm going to turn this on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it brings in just average Joes.
Yes.
It makes people that don't play golf go, man, I kind of want to play golf. And you know, there's people buying equipment. You have golf stores opening. You know, they didn't exist before Tiger Woods. I mean, it was like a pro shop here and there, but, you know, big golf, actual stores, like they didn't exist. He elevated. He's like the Michael Jordan
yes.
of golf. You know, basketball was popular and there would be a basketball without Michael Jordan, but you wouldn't have kids in China playing in the NBA or, you know, watching NBA. You wouldn't have any of that. Michael Jordan expanded all of that. He took what, you know, Magic and Larry elevated and just brought it to a whole new level.
Absolutely. I mean, today, you know, I'm very casual when it comes to golf. I'll follow like the big tournaments on my phone. And if it's the 18th hole and it's close, I'll be like, all right, I'll turn this on. But this morning I was watching the Masters on the edge of my couch, legit nervous as I was watching this all unfold. And when Tiger made that shot that curled around near the hole, I think it was like the 16th or 15th hole. It was the one where they showed Tiger. He's watching. He's going, come on, come on, come on. That moment right there is going to be talked about throughout history. That's sports history right there. That was the moment when people said, Tiger Woods is going to do it, because he was right there the whole ride. And that one guy from Italy who was doing so well was starting to fall apart. And here comes Tiger Woods. And then Tiger Woods takes the lead. And then that shot is made. And it's like, this is going to happen. He's going to do it. And he's going to make history. And he has. There are so many people I saw online saying, I don't know squat about golf, but I am watching this and I am intrigued. The sport of golf is having one of its best days ever, I think. This is one of the most historical days in golf history. I can't imagine what the ratings were like for those last few holes. They had to have skyrocketed.
Yeah, I mean, you know, because there's other golfers that are well-known, Ricky Fowler, Phil Mickelson, Rory McIlroy, but, you know, none of them are Tiger Woods. And even if in 2019 that they've caught up with him or even surpassed him, none of them will ever achieve what Tiger Woods has achieved. And, you know, if Tiger Woods never would have won another major, how important he is for this entire sport.
Well, think about it. You go around talking to people who know nothing about golf or nothing about sports. When you bring up golf and they say, do you know any golfers? The one they'd probably say is, oh, I know Tiger Woods. I mean, Phil Mickelson is one of the better golfers. He's been playing a long time. And among sports fans, people know him, but casual people who know really nothing about sports, they won't know Phil Mickelson as much, but they'll know Tiger Woods. And like you said, the same thing goes for Ricky Fowler and Rory McIlroy. And I mean, let's say Ricky Fowler won the Masters this year. Would people be talking about it? Of course, but nowhere near to the degree as how it all unfolded with Tiger Woods.
And honestly, is if you put the top 10 golfers in the world in front of me, I don't even know who's in the top 10 currently, but the only people I could recognize by face would be Rory McIlroy, Phil Mickelson, and Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
I know other names, but I couldn't match their faces.
It's like Bubba Watson. He looks like an average Joe. It's somewhat hard to pick Bubba Watson out, but you see Tiger Woods, you know who it is. I mean, he has his own brand, for goodness sake. He had video games. When he was in his prime, he had everything. He was everywhere. He had so many sponsors. And his brand is going to be everywhere again. And this isn't just any story. This is a guy who everyone thought was done. People said he's never going to win another Masters. He's going to hang it up. His back is too bad. He's had too many personal problems. There's no way he's going to come back and be what he once was. Well, here he is with a green jacket.
And I don't think he's never going to be what he once was. He's in his 40s. And I know golfers can play for a long time, but he's in his 40s. He's had a lot of back problems. And here's the thing is back problems are really bad for athletes.
Especially in golf.
And so it's really hard to come back from. And you add in some of the other things that have happened, and it's a recipe for him to never achieve, you know, the heights that he once was. But here's the thing is this is how important the guy is. When's the last time he won a major golf tournament and he comes and wins one and the whole world is just like Tiger? I mean, my whole Twitter feed is blowing up about Tiger. I would see mentions if somebody else won, but you hearing Tiger.
Exactly. And I remember a few years ago when Bubba Watson won, I think he made that really big shot. He was behind some trees and that set up for his win. That was probably like the second most talked about Masters I can remember before this one. But people are going to be talking about this for a very, very long time. People are going to be talking about that shot. There are several photos of moments of him from this Masters that are probably going to be on the fronts of sports publications. I mean, I would imagine the next Sports Illustrated is going to have Tiger Woods celebrating, wouldn't you think?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it has to. And it's funny, I'm looking at the top 10 or, you know, the top golfer list, and Jordan Spieth, like, I know the name and know the golfer, but he looks like any guy that's trying to, at a summer festival, hand you a Monster Energy drink.
Yeah, he really does.
Just like, hey, I'm a guy that graduated from this frat 6 years ago. Like, he's just a guy. Nothing remarkable about just, you know, picking him out of the crowd.
Yeah, I mean, the only golfer that I think is also really easy to pick out of a crowd is Phil Mickelson. But, you know, he's kind of got that hair that sticks out from under his cap, and he's got that certain build. But, you know, again, you can show photos of most of these golfers to people. They'd be like, oh, it's a golfer. Oh, but that's Tiger Woods. Like, it's easy. And you know what I thought was one of the most amazing things about the Masters today was just the roar of the crowd. How everyone was so into it. I mean, yeah, the Masters are the Masters, but when Tiger Woods had a good shot or he sunk a putt, the crowd went nuts.
Yeah, and then you've got the security people trying to take him out.
Yeah, it was.
You saw that video, right?
Yes, it was like a mob.
Yeah, he just slid and took his ankle out and has him hopping all over the place.
Yeah, that was something. It goes to show what a big deal this was. And I was kind of wondering, I'm like, if he does win this, what is going to be the reaction from the spectators there? I mean, I know a golf crowd is much more different than, say, a rowdy NFL football crowd. But still, this is history in the making, and this is a big deal. And, you know, people react, sports fans, in certain ways. It was what was also amazing was not only like when he did something, but just as he was doing it, when he first hit it and it goes sailing, immediately you heard everyone's voices start to rise, like, oh, you know, in anticipation of something big happening. And even when he was about to tee off in those late holes, even if it was quiet, you can sense the buzz in the crowd. You saw people standing and kind of rocking back and forth. People were on edge and people were waiting to see it all unfold. And honestly, those are very lucky people because they got to witness history firsthand.
Yeah, that's got to be cool being there.
I always wanted to go to the Masters. I think that'd be so neat.
I mean, you know, in other worldly news is, if you are in Chicago, you probably are aware that the giant Star Wars fan fest, Star Wars celebration, is in Chicago. I've been there the last several days. And it's funny, yesterday it was like almost 70 degrees. It was nice walking around in a t-shirt. And then today we get the blizzard and people are freaking out. And I'm like, it's like the Hoth scene. It's like the Battle of Hoth, you know, keep giving you a little realism of Star Wars and nobody else is finding it amusing.
Well, you know, it's funny. It's like yesterday you could say it was Luke on Tatooine. Today you could say it's Luke on Hoth. And then tomorrow it's going to be 50, so he could say, oh, it's Luke on, I don't know, what's a mid-climate? Dagobah. Okay, that works. It's going to be swampy.
Go Dagobah.
Swampy, Dagobah. Good one.
Yeah, so it was fun, and I saw a lot of cool things. And that's why I was a little late in recording tonight. There was miserable traffic coming back, plus the snow and the slush. Nobody wants to drive in it.
I was surprised at how much came down today. I knew we were going to get snow, but I was looking outside this morning and I'm like, holy shit, I didn't think we were going to get this much.
I didn't even think we were getting any. And then somebody yesterday was like, oh, I'm supposed to have snow tomorrow. I'm like, oh yeah, right. We're going to have snow in, you know, mid-April. I'm like, you know, it happens, but with how nice the weather was and what it's supposed to be like the next couple of days.
Yeah, no, the sight of it is just what, like, because we had all gone out of our winter phase. It's like, all right, we put the boots, the snow pants, all that away.
Yeah, so it was ridiculous snow. And I actually had a big sweeping ball of ice and slush come off of the McCormick place and hit me in the neck.
Really?
Yeah, I had to get checked out by EMS.
No kidding.
Yeah, that was interesting. Never had that happen before. I know I always see downtown the watch for falling ice, but I never got actually hit by it.
Yeah, you gotta watch out for that stuff downtown. I mean, all those buildings, it's kind of scary.
Well, it just came out of nowhere because you know, normally if it's ice, you can, you know, come straight down. This was just slush with the wind, and it just came at like a diagonal.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Man, It's still coming down. I look out the window now. It's still coming down good.
All right. So should we jump into some Chicago sports here?
Why don't we?
So do you want to start Blackhawks? We haven't talked Blackhawks in a while.
Yeah. I mean, their season ended and I have an article I wanted that I wrote that I wanted to discuss with you. So why not?
All right. So first, I guess we can talk about these, unlike the NBA lottery, the draft lottery, where they make a big production of it and they drag it out. It's not for a couple more weeks. The NHL draft, they just do it. Boom. The season ends and that bam, they give you the draft results or the lottery results and the Blackhawks.
Which I like.
Yeah, I do too. It's
just, you know, tell me what we're picking at.
Yeah. That's really, I just want to know. And, just like with basketball is, you know, unlike football, where worst team gets the first pick, second worst, et cetera, is you just get the better odds of getting the first pick. So the Blackhawks went from, I believe that they had the odds, the 12th best odds of getting the first pick. And they ended up getting the third pick. They're getting the number three overall pick, which is fantastic. Because there's quite a few good players in this draft, but you know, as you go further down in the first round, it becomes a little bit of more of a crapshoot, kind of like baseball. You know, very few people step right into the pros or into the majors. They have to work their way in through, you know, juniors or you know, foreign league or AHL. The earlier you pick, the more likely you are to have somebody that's going to step in sooner and help your team.
Everyone was going crazy because if you weren't a Blackhawks fan, you were yelling how it was rigged. Could you imagine if they would have gotten the first overall pick?
Oh my God. People would have lost their minds. I went.
And we would have gotten Jack Hughes.
Yeah. I was out to dinner Wednesday night with a group of people that were in for the Star Wars convention. And one of them is a diehard Red Wings fan. And he was pissing and moaning about how it's rigged and that the Blackhawks, you know, it was cheating and they shouldn't have got it. And I was like, oh, surprise, coming from a Red Wings fan.
They've had it so good for so long. It's.
Yeah. So, yeah, I've been looking at some of the players because other than Jack Hughes, who is, I think, going to be the unanimous number one overall pick.
He's going to be in that Devils uniform on that.
Yeah.
Night.
So I've been looking at, you know, some of the other players and what I'm seeing is the, you know, probably arguably the best player when the Blackhawks draft is a Russian player, Vasily Podkolzin. But from what I'm reading, he's a right winger. And, you know, he's just a super talented player, but the word is that he's got a KHL contract. So he might be harder to get out of that contract to bring him over. So, you know, Blackhawks might end up going another direction, just not having to deal with that KHL contract.
Yeah, you know, I got to do more homework on other draftees because it's been like Jack Hughes. And there are some other notable prospects out there. I haven't done too much reading on them, but I know for a fact that Jack Hughes, it's not like he's the only notable guy out there. There's plenty of other talented players that are going to be in this draft. And the fact that the Hawks are drafting third, I mean, you got to take that. I saw some people, it was kind of funny. Some people are like, man, I would love a top three pick. And then they get a top three pick and then they find out it's third and they go, oh, what the hell? I wanted it to be number one. It's like, we got a top three pick. That's amazing for where we were at.
Yeah, it is amazing. I mean, you know, earlier in the season, you know, we could have been disappointed and been like, wow, we're the worst team in hockey. We should get the number one pick. But by the end, when we were playing fairly well, being able to get the third pick, that's fantastic. And I hear a lot of outcries where, you know, Blackhawks better pick a defenseman. And I mean, I get it. I understand why people are saying that because the blue line was a real problem for the team this year.
Yeah, that's.
But the issue is, to say the least, is you're going to be you're going to be drafting kids that are young. You're going to be drafting these young kids, and you know, if you draft a defenseman, what are the odds that he's going to step in day one and play for you in the NHL? It's very, very unlikely. So, you know, we need defenseman help sooner than that. So I just want them to take the best player available and then use those resources to get NHL caliber defensemen that can help now, or bring up some of the defensemen that we've drafted over the last couple of drafts, you know, that have had a few seasons under their belt to prepare.
Yeah, for sure. And this changes the game right here. And you saw that smirk on Stan Bowman's face. Was that great? Yeah,
I mean, you have to be happy. You have to be happy.
He probably wanted to jump up and throw a freaking party right then and there.
Oh, well, of course. Who wouldn't? If you're a Blackhawks fan, this is just fantastic news. You know, it's just a big win. Is you saw the progression at the end of the season. You think you've got your head coach of the future, you know, and you get the number three pick, and you've got some young defensemen coming up. So things are looking bright when they looked real bleak just a couple of months ago.
Yeah, I mean, it looked like a team without a future, even though we had some prospects and Taze and Kane were still there. But you think about it, they were able to trade away some nothings for some somethings. They were able to get this pick in the draft. They were able to identify their coach for the future. And you continue to see the growth of Alex DeBrincat. A lot of good things happened the past few months. In the last days of Q, it just looked like an utter disaster with no end in sight, even with some of the prospects. Now, I feel a bit better. And honestly, when the season ended this year, I felt a hell lot better than I did when the season ended the year before. That was really bleak.
Absolutely. So do you want to go through some player grades here?
Yeah. So for Windy City Chronicle, I did some letter grades, you know, basic A+, B+, C. You get the idea. And I went through all the key players and gave them grades. And by key players, I mean guys who have made an impact, who are going to make an impact, who have played a majority of the games. So guys who played like two games, like Alexandre Fortin, or guys who are traded away like Brandon Manning, are not on this list. So I broke it down between forwards, defense, and goalies. Where would you like me to start?
Let's start somewhere positive. Let's start with the forwards.
Okay. So I have three A grades. Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane get A+. Alex DeBrincat gets an A. Why not the plus for him? Well, the only thing I'm going to take away from him is that in those pretty critical games towards the end of the season, he kind of disappeared. But regardless, 41 goals from a 21-year-old kid who really isn't that big, you got to like that. And yeah. Kane and Toews, that's pretty self-explanatory. They both put up career years, career numbers. What else can you say?
I mean, he was everything that you hoped he would be and plus some this year.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy that they had their best years when they didn't make the playoffs.
Just think 2 years ago, people were like, do we think he can play in the NHL?
And, especially Jonathan Toews, yeah.
And now look, you know, look where he is.
What do you think happened? You think he just played with a chip on his shoulder? You think he just was in better physical shape? Do you think it was maybe just because the depth wasn't as there much, so he took on more of the burden? But in the end, it looked like he played better. He looked like he was moving like he was in his youth. He looked like young Jonathan Toews.
He looked fantastic. And I don't know what it was, if it was just getting used to the speed of the NHL game or the physicality. I don't know, but he really took a step up, and you hope that, I mean, it's hard to believe that that's not a permanent step, you know, it's just a mirage, but you know, you just hope that maintains.
Absolutely. No doubt. So if you don't have anything left for that, I'll move on. Brandon Saad, I gave him the B plus range. I said, hey, he bounced back from the year before. He looked a lot better in certain situations. He played very well as a two-way forward. He ended with 23 goals and 47 points. And all I got to say for that is that's pretty typical Brandon Saad.
Yeah, agreed.
Pretty easy, yeah?
Yeah, I would agree.
Okay, so after that, I forgot, there was one more A, and this is considering the circumstances. I gave another A to Dylan Strome, and you consider he was a 22-year-old in Phoenix struggling. He comes over and puts up 17 goals and 57 points in 58 games for the Hawks, and he came over in the Nick Schmaltz trade. I just think with the fact that we got that out of him for Nick Schmaltz, who really did not fit this team whatsoever, that deserves an A. I don't know what you think.
I mean, I would probably go B plus, maybe B plus, but I agree. I mean, it was a fantastic trade, and he really took that step forward. I know that Nick Schmaltz got hurt, but you know, considering that they liked him enough to sign him to an extension, I think this was a trade that both sides are happy with.
Yeah, that's fair. I can dig that reasoning. So then Artem Anisimov, I gave him a C. It wasn't his best year, 15 goals, 22 assists. He usually scores 20 plus. He was better at the end of the year, but it's kind of when they were completely out of it. He's 30 now. He may be traded. I still think he has some value, but you know, considering where he usually is and considering the year he had last year, I just got to give it a C.
I would say C if he made less money. I mean, I don't know if you factored in salary at all, you know, because of expectations. But just the value of the contract he has, I would expect more. If he was, you know, a $2 million a year player or less, I would say C or so, but I mean, he's not a D. I'd probably go like C minus, you know, just because there was expectations, higher expectations there based on the contract he was given.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah. Okay. I can dig that reasoning. This one was a little tricky because it's kind of hard to know where to judge him because he was so streaky. And considering that he's really just a fourth line forward, I gave Dominic Cahoon a B-. He scored 13 goals, 24 assists, and he showed some nice speed. But again, he's really nothing more than a low line depth guy.
I think it's fair. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the expectations were of him, but when he was good, he was real good. So yeah, the B plus or B minus C plus range, that's fair. I think that's fair for him.
All right. Here's my first F, Chris Kunitz.
Fair.
I mean, and I can't be too mad at him because he's 40 years old. He was a very good player. He's had a very nice career. He is not a bad player by any means, but he was old. He scored 10 points total in 56 games. This really isn't as much of me hating on Chris Kunitz. This is more of a Stan Bowman thing. What did you think a 40-year-old Chris Kunitz was going to do
at this point? I mean, I don't know what you expected him to do, but I know what most of us expected him to do, and he did it.
Which is not much.
Yeah, which is not much.
He hasn't put up 40-plus points since 2016.
Yeah, so I don't understand. The Stan Bowman is an enigma. You know, sometimes you're like, man, it's a genius move, and then sometimes you're like, what the hell is he doing?
Right. Yeah, I never got this move whatsoever. But yeah, sorry, Chris, that's an F. Next, I have David Kampf. Doesn't really score. He could play some solid defense for his position. I don't really have much to say else about David Kampf. Just meh. Shrug.
He gets a, on an A through F, he gets a meh.
Yeah.
And they think that's a fitting grade.
So that's why I gave him a C. Okay. That's, to me, that's the closest thing to a meh.
He gets a meh. Meh.
But would you agree with
yeah,
that?
Yeah. You know, I think that's fair.
Okay. Next one is Brendan Perlini. I was a little tougher on him. I gave him a C minus. He had that one little hot streak in mid-March, but other than that, what did he really do?
You know, sometimes you saw potential in him that you're like, I think we could see something from him, and then it just never materialized.
Right.
Like, if next year he comes out, like, nothing he could do next year would really shock me. If he came out and played really well, I'd be like, I saw the potential. But if he comes out and, you know, stinks on ice, like, you're like, well, I mean, he had that potential too. I just, he has a lot of talent and I think he can put it together. It's just, does he do it? Does he actually put it together? And that's the hard, I mean, that's the hard part. I mean, everybody, you know, they're all really talented people in the NHL, but you know, I just think he's got a nice scoring ability, and I just you'd like to see him figure it out, and you know, rather than just meander in this league. And I'm curious of what he's going to do next year, because I think it's the make or break year for him. And I think, is it next year? Is this his contract year, or was he under contract for next year too?
I feel he may be under contract next year, or he's a restricted free agent. One of the two.
I think he might be restricted, which, you know, if the Blackhawks see something in him, it could be good, because you can give, you know, he can't warrant a big contract. So you maybe you get him for a good price and try to squeeze out of him. But yeah, I wouldn't be upset if they let him walk either. I think that's a fitting grade you gave him.
Yeah, I mean, if they see enough potential, they may keep him. But if they're going to make enough changes in the offseason, depending on what it is, he may not be very high up the list of guys to keep.
Yeah, I mean, if you're really trying to make a legitimate change and compete for a Stanley Cup, then he needs to be on a short leash as far as his playing time, if you do keep him.
Right. So next we have Drake Kajula. I gave him a B+. He scored 12 points in 26 games for the Hawks. We got him for Brandon Manning. The fact that we got that for Brandon Manning, I think, deserves a nicer grade.
Yeah, I mean, if you would have got a window decal for your car for Brandon Manning, then you got a solid return. But to get somebody that actually put some, that's, you know, had a decent number of points, you know, half point a game player, that's a win.
That was a good move by Stan Bowman, frankly. They did the Oilers dirty on that one.
Yeah.
All right, next, big old fat F goes to John Hayden. Simple reason, he's an American Hockey League player.
It's true. There's guys that are playing in the NHL that shouldn't be in the NHL. They're AHL players.
I mean, he's trying to be the enforcer that was once an essential on a hockey team, but he isn't really that much of an enforcer. He just had a few big hits, a few games in his career, and that's about it. So I have nothing else to say, but he's a Rockford Ice Hog.
I mean, that's fair. That's absolutely fair.
Next guy, I know some people are going to dislike me for this, but I gave Marcus Kruger a D. He's making $2.3 million to put up, what, 12 points? Come on.
When you said people are going to be mad at you, I thought you were going to say B. D, I think it's fair. I think that's the kind of player he was. I think you need, other than the fact that he is, I don't even know, what does he bring? What does he bring that you can't bring somebody in cheaper to do?
Right. I mean,
there was a time when we were like, all right, Marcus Kruger, I think he's an important cog in this team. And that time is not 2019.
Right. That happened after 2015. That happened after the last cup. So in my article, I said, thank you for your first tenure. You killed off penalties. You scored that big overtime goal in the conference finals in 2015. But there was really no point of bringing him back. They only brought him back, be like, oh, hey, he's a penalty killer, but he's making $2.3 million. They had the worst penalty kill in the league. It was historically bad, and he put up 12 points all season.
Yeah, you know, no need for him to return. He doesn't.
No.
Yeah, he's not what you need, and he's not a good player at this point. He's not even like a team leader where you're like, oh, well, at least we get some benefit of him mentoring people. Like, he's just there.
Yeah, that's exactly what he is. He's just there. Again, thanks for your first tenure. You had a purpose here. That's past. The last forward I have is Dylan Sekura. I gave him a D+, C-. He had some tough luck in 33 games. I still kind of consider him a work in progress, though.
He's another one that I don't know what the plan is for him. And I feel like, based on production, I think it's a fair grade. But in another way, I think it's an unfair grade because I think he was not put in a position to succeed. I just feel like I don't know what the Blackhawks are doing with him. And I hope that they're able to figure out exactly who he is and how he's going to fit on this team so he has a chance to succeed. But I don't know what the plan is for him. Or, you know, I just felt like they were putting a round peg in a square hole with him.
Yeah, I don't really know what the deal is there either. I don't know if he's really even that important of a player going forward. I just think while I gave him a lower grade, I kind of just said, hey, in the end, he's kind of a work in progress. So you could almost say that's an incomplete grade right there.
Yeah. You know, how many games did it take him? I mean, would he go scoreless in how many games?
A lot.
Yeah. I mean, I hope he succeeds, but who knows? Who knows what you're going to get with him?
Yeah, that's still a mystery. You ready to move on to defensemen?
I don't know if I'm ready for that yet. Can we go goalies first?
Goalies? All right. We can do goalies. Goalies were hard.
Yeah, especially one. But yeah, go ahead.
What made this so hard was the fact that one had injuries and they all had to deal with a shit defense. Let's start with Corey Crawford. I gave him a B+. Now, there were times when it looked ugly, but A, the defense sucked, and B, he was injured. But you saw the way he played towards the end of the year. He looked like the Corey Crawford of old.
Yeah, and I was actually really surprised because I didn't know what to expect from him. Mm-hmm. Because he was off the ice for so long, came back, got injured, and then you don't know what to expect, especially with head injuries, chronic head injuries. I mean, he was not a shell of his former self. There was moments where it clearly looked like the rust was on those joints, but once he got in that groove, you're like, this is why he was one of the top goalies in the NHL.
Absolutely. You saw it, especially in that game against Montreal, where wasn't it a career game? I think he had like a career high in saves.
Yeah. He loves playing against his childhood team.
Yep. Exactly. This was the hardest one. And I'm talking about Cam Ward. You look at the numbers and you say, oh, you give this guy an F. An 897 save percentage, 367 goals against averaged. You just say, okay, F right off the bat. But. Yeah, he got off to a bad start, a really bad start. But mid-season, when they got hot, I think he played really well. And he was peppered with 40-plus shots a game. It was really hard for him, but he kept the Blackhawks in games pretty much throughout when Jeremy Colliton was head coach. Because when Q was head coach, he was just bad all around. But a lot of those numbers are going to be blown up from the bad start and the fact that the defense was so bad. But he kept you in the game. So I gave him a B-, despite the numbers.
I think that's fair. I mean, you got a lot more than you expected from him. And considering how bad the defense was and how many quality shots and high percentage scoring chances that there were against him and most of the Blackhawks goalies, considering that he was already a question mark going into the season, that he stepped up like that, you gotta grade him, you know, a little higher than you otherwise would. You know, he had some baptism by fire with this defense sometimes.
Absolutely. Like those March games, late February. Oh, some of those games he had where he just had to stand on his head. And was he in, I can't remember. Was he in net or was it Corey Crawford? I can't remember who was in net when they were playing. Was it the Leafs? And the Leafs had like 20 plus shots in the period. I can't remember who it was. Or was it Colin Dalia?
I remember the game. I can't remember.
But you know
who
my
goalie
point
was,
is what I'm trying to say.
Is this defense, I don't know how they finished the season, but at one point they were just at the bottom of the league and, you know, they're tops of the league and giving up most shots, tops of the league and you know, the highest scoring percentage shots, the dangerous shots. Like you're just, this team, this defense was just abysmal. It was like a Swiss cheese. So, you know, whoever was in the goal for the Blackhawks, you just felt like they had to stand. If you were going to give a chance, there's either you either needed to score 8 goals or the goalie would have to stand on his head.
Right. And, you know, Cam Ward, he was brought in originally to be a backup, kind of a placeholder, but he had to take on some of the reins when Corey Crawford was hurt. He played a lot of games, so he really stepped up, I thought. So I got to give him
absolutely
some credit.
The purpose he served was to be a veteran presence, to serve as Corey Crawford's backup and as a transition until you could develop somebody younger and play every couple of nights to spell Corey Crawford. And what happened is he had to step up and be, you know, the guy. And did he do a great job? No, but he also had no tools. So you got to appreciate what he was able to do based on what he had to work with.
Because you could look at those ugly numbers, the save percentage and the goals against. They could have been even a heck of a lot worse with that defense.
I mean, MacGyver could turn, you know, a piece of gum and 2 Twizzle sticks into a helicopter, but not everyone can do that. You know, he had garbage to work with and, you know, he was able to be somewhat productive.
I love the MacGyver reference. Love it.
So you got one more goalie ranking,
but I marked it as incomplete. Colin Dalia. I just don't think we saw enough of him. We saw the good. We saw the bad. He made some terrific saves. He let in some of the softest goals you'll ever see. He made some amazing plays, but he also had a really tough time with rebound control. He's a work in progress. There's promise, but he's got work to do.
I'm actually excited about what he could be. I think he could be the goalie of the future. And I don't know if he is a championship caliber goalie. I don't think so, but I think he's, you know, got some promise. And we saw you're right. We saw some really high moments for him, but then we just saw, you know, some dog shittery.
Yeah. Remember that game against the Capitals? He made that save that was absolutely unbelievable. And then he let in like one of the softest goals you'll ever see.
So it was, you know, it was an odd couple of months that we had him up there regularly playing. So it'll be nice to see him. I don't know what the plan is from the off season, but you hope. I think what's best for him is if he gets to play in Rockford every night and really get the chance to work consistently. I don't think being Corey Crawford's backup is what's best for him at this point.
Yeah, I would have called for him to play in the NHL if Corey Crawford was still hurt and he could play often. But that's not the case right now, so it's probably why they sent him down to Rockford.
Yeah, it's just, you know, you need to play every day. It's just like baseball. You need to got to play. It's really hard in these kind of sports to just be idle and then be young, be idle, and then be able to step in. You what you call somebody that's able to be coming from the cold, coming from not playing and step in and do the job, you call them a professional. And he's still a kid. He's still young. Mm-hmm. He needs to get to that point where he's a professional.
Touche. You ready to go to defense?
Oh, yeah, I'm ready.
Okay. So you may think I'm generous with some of these grades. I mean, the defensive unit as a whole gets an F, but, you know, keep in mind that the defenseman I have listed here wasn't every single defenseman that played for the Hawks last season. So again, keep that in mind.
Is it some of them you started to write something and you just got violently ill and were like, all right, I just can't do this.
I had a puke bucket. It was a spittoon, but I cleaned it out and made it my puke bucket. So I write.
Was it autographed by John Lackey?
It was. It said hee haw on the top of it. And it was spelled H-E-E hyphen H-A-W. It has the engraving of a boot on the side.
It's got a spur mark dented into it.
I had that handy for this, yes.
All right, let's hear.
So the highest grade I gave a defenseman was a B. Do you have any guess into which defenseman that was?
Duncan Keith?
Nope.
Connor Murphy?
Yes. I gave him the highest ranked. Connor Murphy was nothing extraordinary, but he, I think, was their best guy, which is not saying much. I thought he was solid, not great. Yeah, that's all I got to say, really.
Hello?
Yes?
Oh, I lost you for a second.
Did you?
Yeah. So Connor Murphy, B. What do I think about that? I would agree that he was probably the best defensive defenseman that we had, and mm-hmm. It's weird to say that. But he was. The best defensive, forward we had. I mean, there's other guys that were much better offensive minded, if you look at Eric Gustafson, if you're looking at their offensive prowess, vastly superior to Connor Murphy. But, Connor Murphy was, he led the team in, what do you have, plus 15 or something?
It sounds about right.
He was a decent scorer. I think he scored 13 points or so. I think he was pretty steady. So, yeah, I would say he is the highest grade. Does that deserve a B? I don't know. But I would say I would agree that he was the highest rated defenseman on the Blackhawks last year.
Yeah, and again, it's not saying much, but that's kind of where we are. And since you mentioned Eric Gustafson, I'll just go right into him. I gave him a C. The reason is I put him right in the middle.
Oh, I'm sorry, you cut off for a second. Who was that?
Eric Gustafson.
Okay.
So I gave him a C because the two things evened out. Fantastic scoring ability. 17 goals, 60 points. His shot is wicked. He was a gut-wrenchingly terrible defenseman. My solution, make him a forward. He's got a great shot.
Maybe that might be the answer because he is a good scorer.
And his defense, I can't tell you how atrocious
it is. It is bad. He just, you know, can he become a good defenseman? I don't know, but he's not a good defenseman right now.
He showed almost no flashes of being a good defenseman. I'd rather see him as a forward taking slap shots and scoring more goals because he clearly can do that than watching him get totally roasted or being way out of place like Chris Conte in 2014.
Yeah, it was brutal sometimes watching him look lost on the defensive end. But you see him on the offensive zone and he's like a savant.
He looks great offensively. Loved watching him. He scored some overtime goals. He looked great.
Yeah, so I don't know what the answer for him is, but it's like when a player in baseball has a solid WAR and they're batting like 200. You're like, all right, that must have a hell of a glove. Like it's like the inverse over here is, you know, like he's got that's a okay grade, but he's such a bad defenseman. Yeah, that scoring is good.
Exactly. It's like the two clashing together.
All right, who's next?
So I just decided we're going to do Keith and Seabrook last, so I'll go through the others. The other two I have on here, Gustav Forsling, D-. He's bad.
Yeah.
He hasn't shown really anything. He's gone next year. Sorry for the young kid. Maybe he goes somewhere else and he does better, but yeah.
And who?
Anything to elaborate?
No, I don't know what else there is. It's wonk wonk.
Mm-hmm. The other one I had was Slater Cuckoo. I gave him a C-. He actually showed some flashes of being okay, but he had some really brutal turnovers in big games. And then you started seeing him see more games in the press box, snacking on peanuts. So yeah, not that generous of a grade. And he's probably going to be elsewhere next year.
Yeah, fair.
All right, then let's just go ahead to Keith and Seabrook then. This was a little harder. First, I'll start with Duncan Keith. He still did not look like his old self. You saw some flashes. He still got burned a lot. He's not quick anymore. But the scoring did come back. He was a plus 13, if you care about plus minus. I know it's a little it's not the best assessment of a defenseman, but you know, I will throw that out there. I gave him a C.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I mean it's fair.
I didn't think he was terrible, but he wasn't great like he once was.
I think he led the Blackhawks defenseman in ice time again.
That wouldn't surprise me.
So it's fair. I think it's fair. And you know, I think here's my thing about him is I still think that contract is movable for him. I think he played at a high enough level. And if you were to pair him with somebody and maybe put him on like a second, you know, a second pairing where he's not getting as many minutes. I think he could be effective and I think you could pawn him off somewhere. And if you don't, I still think you can squeeze some out of him. I think he's still got, you know, something in the tank. It just to ride him for that many minutes and continue him being the you know, the ice time leader of your defenseman. It's just not who he is anymore.
No.
So I think you just need to be smarter, and I think you need to bring in better defensemen, because if you move him down a little bit, I think that makes your defense better, because I think he still has something. It just, he can't be your best defenseman. He can't be your ice time leader.
Right.
That's just not in this day and age.
Yeah. He can't keep up with that, with all that. At this age, with all those miles on his legs, it amazes me he still plays that many minutes a night.
It's amazing that they keep trying to make him do that.
It really is. It really is. And then lastly, Brent Seabrook. I gave him like a C-. And all I had to say for that was Father Time is undefeated. That contract is bad. You can move him to a D if you want to factor in the contract, but that's more on Stan Bowman than him. So I just kind of went with him as a player. C-, that's all I really got to say.
I would probably put him in the D range. And I don't know if you heard that the Blackhawks front office basically told him, you need to be better in the offseason, get in a better shape. And he was just like, no, I'm not changing anything.
Hmm.
So I wonder if part of it is that he's just not in the shape that he once was. And it's a, you know, they cited Jonathan Toews. Is Jonathan Toews worked out differently in the offseason and came back and improved as a player? Is what if this is just a what if? What if, I mean, part of why Seabrook is not playing well is that he's not in the best condition.
Maybe, because I mean, it's one thing to be older and struggle, but you just see the struggles from him and it just looks all around bad.
Yeah. I mean you still have aging defensemen that play at a higher level than him. And, you know, he's not ancient for defensemen. So to see him, you know, fall off this quickly, maybe that's a contributing factor to it.
Maybe. And the one other thing I will say about the miles on him is he's got a lot of additional miles with all those playoff games they played. I mean, that's another who knows how many like seasons worth on those legs right there. So I will say that, but you know, maybe it's true. Maybe that is a factor.
Yeah. I mean, if you can bring in some better defensemen around him, take away some minutes from him, get him in better conditioning, maybe his play is palatable.
Sure.
I don't know. We'll find out though.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the reckoning is coming. You know, this is a new Blackhawks era, and you've got your first off season of the Colleton era. And, things are going to change. You know, you saw how much of an improvement he brought in a different philosophy that he brought mid season, and players at first were not, you know, behind it, and they eventually bought in, saw the improvement. I think he's going to do, and he focused on certain areas. I think there's going to be a lot more areas he focuses on in the off season, and Seabrook needs to be on board with that.
Yeah, I agree.
So do you want to talk a little baseball? I'm going to say this, and I know I'm going to piss people off.
Let's go.
Schwarber went around.
When I watched it in real time, I missed the game because I was watching Captain Marvel with some friends. But when I saw it in real time, like when I saw the video of it, I thought he went around. I thought he did. Now you slow it up and you look at it frame by frame, it's pretty dang close. But when I looked on Twitter and I saw the reaction, people thought that like it was it's made it sound like it was a slight flinch and that it wasn't anywhere near him going around. I looked at it in real time. The first time I'm like, that looks like a swing to me.
Yeah. I mean, I saw it, you know, first at full speed and I'm like, why are people mad? Why is he mad? And then I watched it in slow motion and I'm like, I don't see anything in the slow motion that if I would have seen the slow motion first and I may have been like, oh, that's a non-swing, but I saw it in full speed first. It looked like a swing. I saw it from the slow motion and from the other, and it just, there was nothing to prove to me that it wasn't a swing. You've got a human being making a call and I didn't disagree with it. So I just, Schwarber's reaction went way overboard for, you know, how close it was.
Yeah, I would say it was 50-50. I think it was a coin flip. And honestly, if I were the umpire, keep in mind where the vantage point is, 90-ish feet away from the angle, from the speed. You know, you're not watching real life in slow motion. You're watching it as it happened. I probably would have called it a swing, even if it may not have been by like a centimeter. I probably would have called it a swing. And, you know, the fact of the matter is that pitch shouldn't have even been offered at. That bounced in front of home plate. It wasn't even close.
Yeah, agreed.
And the other thing was, we could talk about the Schwarber all day. Again, I missed it. I wasn't watching it live. But I saw back and saw it. We're not going to talk about that Wilson Contreras at bat right before, when he had the tying run on with less than two outs, 90 feet away, in the winning run on second base. We're not going to talk about that.
Have at it.
That was a terrible at bat. And Wilson's been doing very good this year, but he had a rough game yesterday. That was part of it. And if Schwarber would have walked, that just would have loaded the bases. I could see it being a bit more emotionally charged if the bases were already loaded, and that was the difference between ending the game or tying the game. But you don't know if the next guy was going to come through or not. That was ball four just to load the bases. And his run wouldn't have mattered. If they would have won, then the runner on second would have scored. Or if they would have tied it, it would have been the guy at third. This wasn't with the bases loaded. I think the Wilson Contreras at bat was much more important. Because if he would have at least put the ball in play and tied the game, then the Schwarber at bat, if it ends the way it does, and you're tied, you just go to extra innings. And the other thing was, they played like crap that day. They walked in how many runs, that bullpen? They came in and walked how many runs? You had a really bad second inning by Kyle Hendricks. You were facing a lineup that did not have Trout, that did not have Pujols, that did not have Justin Upton. You played like crap that day. A lot of things went wrong. It wasn't just that moment.
Yeah, and Hendricks has not pitched well this year for the most part. The bullpen still having issues. And let's be honest, is Rizzo is not batting well.
No, he's not.
Chris Bryant is not batting well.
Nope. Schwarber's in a run.
Yeah. Do you know who is batting well?
Let's see. Well, Wilson Contreras is batting well. Ben Zobrist is batting well.
Jason Hayward.
Of course. Duh.
I said it last, was it last week or the week before, that I liked the way he was swinging the bat. Yeah. And I said, I didn't know if it was going to result in better numbers. I didn't know if it was, you know, what it was going to result in, but his approach at the plate and the swing did look way better. They looked like pre-Cubs days, and he looks good and he's getting the results.
Well, they talked about his swing being smoother, his hands moving a little bit, and I'm not a batting expert, but if you watch him swing, it looks more like the swing he had in St. Louis that one year.
Yeah, he looks good. He's hitting for a little bit of power. I mean, his OPS right now is like a 1.15.
He has half the home runs he hit last year already.
Yeah, he looks solid. And to be honest with you, he's part of the reason that the Cubs aren't worse than they already are.
Yeah, I mean, he saved their asses that one night in Milwaukee when we were on. When we were talking in the middle of that, he hit two home runs, and he's been doing good ever since. And even when he's not getting hits, he's drawing walks.
Yeah.
He's just getting on base.
He looks fantastic, and I hope this keeps up. I mean, it would be great. It would be great. You know, the Cubs really need that boost to make that salary justifiable and palatable.
What's really promising is that he's hitting the ball with authority. Because remember when Hayward would have a couple of quote-unquote hot streaks the last few years, and it was just
bloops and, you know,
ground balls finding holes.
Yeah, they were seeing eye singles and bloops. And now, though, he's hitting the ball hard.
And he's hitting it all over the park. He's going oppo. He's going center. He's pulling it a bit. He's going everywhere.
Absolutely. I mean, that's great to see, because a lot of guys on the Cubs just are not swinging the bats well.
Yeah, and I know Rizzo always gets off to his slow start, but time to wake up there. Bryant's got to wake up. Pitching-wise, Kyle Hendricks always starts slow, but I think you can agree that the Cubs and he and everyone else do not want him to figure it out mid-season like last year. It's like, okay, let's go.
Yeah, I mean, and here's the thing. It's Chris Bryant is coming off a bad year. Whether it's the shoulder that was causing the issue last year, whatever, he's off to a bad start. We need the Chris Bryant of his first and second year.
It's frustrating because he got off to a very good start, but ever since the second series of the year, he isn't just struggling. He looks completely lost up there. And how many times have we seen him just flat out miss pitches right down the middle?
Yeah,
he just misses them.
He just looks terrible up there. And the swing looks bad. I don't even know how to describe it. He looks like easy out.
Yeah. I hope he picks it up soon.
Well, I think we all do.
No kidding. He just has had some brutal at-bats with runners on. We want him to be that guy. He was. We're at the point right now where we want the bottom of the order up. Because when you think about it, the bottom of the order has been producing. And you know what really sucks? Is seeing Victor Caratini have the broken bone in his hand. He was hitting the piss out of the ball. And I think he was working very well with the pitching staff. Don't you think?
I think he took a big step forward, and I was a little bit shocked. I don't think either one of us expected that.
No, I didn't.
But he, you know, he was playing very well, and to see him, you know, have that injury just derail things, it really sucked.
And I mean, he's going to be out for a month or so. So it's not like he's coming back in a week. It's not like the 10-day IL or something. This is a bit more serious than that. And who knows if he's even going to be the same when he comes back. I mean, the hand is kind of important.
Did I hear 4 to 6 weeks? Yeah, that's brutal. What are they going to do? Who are they bringing up?
It's Taylor Davis.
Wouldn't it have been nice if maybe they had picked up a veteran, you know, in the offseason?
That's what I was wanting. I think they may still go after Sandy Leon. Wouldn't take much to trade for him. Look, Davis has worked his butt off through his career, and I'm sure it's a dream for him. And it was fun seeing him play in September, but do you really want to rely on Taylor Davis being your backup catcher right now, the way you've started? It's nice when you got a nice lead in September, but right now, I want someone who's experienced.
Yep. Agreed.
I mean, I don't mean to be offensive to the guy, but he's a AAA player.
Agreed. And you know, the Cubs, The Cubs got off to a brutal start, started playing a little better, but then, you know, just still struggling, you know, along. They're in last place. The only redeeming thing is they've got the Marlins series coming up, and the Marlins are brutal too.
You have to sweep them. No ifs, and
you have to. I mean, luckily, is with how bad they've been playing, they're only four games out of first. I mean, I know it's early, but it looked for a while like we could have been, you know, 8-9 games back this early. So, you know, you got to count your blessings there, but you really got to take advantage of playing bad teams. Get some wins under your belt. Get a winning streak under your belt. Get some confidence. And even if it's against a terrible team, that's what you got to do.
I'm looking at the April schedule right now. You have Miami for three. Then you go home for Arizona for three. Then you have the Dodgers. And then you have Arizona again in Arizona. You have to take the Miami series. You have to sweep that. You got to take two or three at home against Arizona. You got to take two or three on the road against Arizona. And you have to win at least one of those LA series, one of those games in the LA series. For me, I think to at least look good moving forward.
Don't you agree? I mean, it's where we're less than 20 games into the season, and the Dodgers are already Jekyll and Hyde. There's, you know, the unbeatable Dodgers that are just clobbering the ball, and then there's the Dodgers that can't score a run to save their lives. And
conveniently against the Cardinals and the Brewers.
I know. But you hope that you get the bad car or the bad Dodgers when the Cubs play them, so you can, you know, take a couple games. But you're right. It's this is an Arizona team that is sans the Cub killer, and they're a under 500 team. Is you've gotta take advantage when you're playing teams that are under 500. The Marlins have the worst record in the National League. You got to take advantage of that. And I know you got Yu Darvish on the mound, but who on the Marlins scares you batting?
Well, that's the problem.
I don't even know who's on that team anymore.
Other than Starlin Castro, I know Brian Anderson is kind of a promising-looking guy. They got Louis Brinson, who they got from the Brewers. Other than that, I think their top pitcher is Wei-Yin Chen.
Yeah, so it's a team you gotta beat. You gotta win.
And they have not looked good at that stadium, the Cubs. Every time they go there, they always seem to struggle. Do you remember the first series last year?
Mm-hmm.
And this team is even worse than that. So they have to sweep this series.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't sweep this series, and if you lose this series, that's bad news. That's real bad news.
It's devastating news. Yeah. The other bit of bad news I wanted to talk about was John Lester.
Yeah, I haven't heard the latest on his injury. You know, I saw they took him out. And we're doing an MRI, which is never good. But then I saw him and he was like, I plan to make my next start.
Well, he's going to miss at least one.
And well, he was saying, I'm not going to miss any. And then you said, then you have, I think it was the day after, you have Joe saying, well, we know we're going to miss John for a couple of starts. And I'm like, a couple of starts?
Yeah.
I'm
like, yeah.
So I don't know what we're at with this.
It's a hamstring. Those are tricky. It could be nothing. It could be major. I mean, if he comes back and is still bothering him, Joe clearly saw something he didn't like. That's why he left the game when he was pitching. So I don't know.
I mean, it was bad. It sucked that happened. He was pitching well, and he's the only Cubs pitcher that's been pitching well consistently.
And he's missing bats again. Have you noticed that?
Yeah. And he's raking at the plate.
Yes, he is.
But the bullpen came in and shut that game down.
Nice surprise, wasn't it?
It really was.
I had to rub my eyes.
Yeah, I was like, who are these guys? So, yeah, I mean, hopefully he can come back quickly, because he needs to be the stabilizing force in this whole pitching staff. Not just the starting rotation, but the whole pitching staff.
Absolutely. And it stinks that he's hurt. Though I was very, very encouraged by the start Jose Quintana had the other night against the Pirates. 7 innings, no runs, 11 strikeouts. That's what we traded Eloy Jimenez for, was that. And hopefully he keeps that up, because he looked fantastic against the Pirates.
Yeah, absolutely. He looked good. And then we hope that's what we see going forward, because this pitching staff's got to turn around.
Yeah, and I think we've seen some better things from the starters. Cole Hamels looks like Cole Hamels again, and he's great at Wrigley Field. Now, Yu Darvish's start the other night, I thought there were a lot of promising things in that start. The command was there. He was throwing strikes. Yeah, he laid in a couple of meatballs that got hit out of the park. But overall, I think he looked a heck of a lot better than his last two starts. So I could at least hope he's building off something right there. You hope. We'll see that tomorrow. Hopefully that translates. Yeah.
And maybe the Cubs can not get snowed out, you know, any more games.
Yeah, I think the chances of that happening tomorrow or this series are pretty slim. Just saying, Miami.
How hilarious would that be if Miami got a snow postponement?
I would just give up on life. I'd be like, you know what? I don't understand anything anymore.
Up is down. Cats are living with dogs.
John Lackey no longer rides Buttercup. It's mass hysteria.
So you want to transition to the White Sox and then wrap this up?
Sure. There was one more Cubs topic I want to touch on really fast.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Sorry.
No problem. I have been pro Albert Elmora Jr. for a while, and I didn't want to believe the doubters. But I think I'm realizing by now that Albert Elmora Jr. is a platoon player.
I didn't want him to be. I really didn't. You know, there's moments where you're like, okay, well, you know, he swings the bat well. He doesn't walk a lot. But, you know, he can hit for a high average. But he's got a nice glove, but he's not the starting center fielder for a championship team.
No, we haven't had that since Dexter Fowler. Unfortunately, I love his defense. He hits lefties well. You play him when a lefty starter's on the mound, or when he's not starting and you're winning in a close game, you put him in center field late for defense. I was pro play him every day for a while, but I think we've gotten to the point where he is what he is, and he's a platoon player.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, the thing is the way the Cubs are playing, you need to play hot bats. Mark Zagunas is swinging the bat much better. But he's a brutal.
Oh yeah,
brutal
the defense is doo doo.
Yeah, I mean, when you're like, oh man, we need to play Schwarber for his defense, then you know that Zagunas is a doo doo outfielder. Yeah.
But that's all I really wanted to say there, because the Cubs center field position, the production hasn't been there. Ian Happ has done some things in AAA, but he's still striking out a lot, which is a little concerning. And it just makes you more and more wish the Cubs would have been at least in on Lorenzo Cain or Christian Yelich when they had the chance.
Oh, if they had Christian Yelich, this would be a different conversation we're having.
Heck, even if they had Lorenzo Cain, if you would just sign him as a free agent.
Yeah.
He'd solve your leadoff issue right there.
Yeah. And for the record, Ian Happ is batting 225 in Iowa.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a. It's not a pretty sight for him. He's a 629 OPS.
Wow. Yikes. I don't know if he's pressing or I don't know. I haven't seen any of the footage.
And to put that into perspective of how bad 629 is do we remember last year how much he struggled with the majors and he had a 761 OPS. So it's like 130 points lower.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, he's in 40 at bats. He's got 9 hits, no home runs, 3 walks, 13 strikeouts. So he's gotten, 50% more strikeouts than hits. So if he can't understand why he's down in Iowa, then that's a completely different problem that we have with him.
Yeah, sigh. That's all I had to say on that.
So, White Sox, they beat the Yankees. That's good. Rodon had another strong start. Looked good. You're seeing decent play out of the White Sox bullpen has stats that rival, if not are worse than the Cubs bullpen statistics.
Yeah,
which is remarkable. How bad? Because is my buddy Gary was sending me, screenshots of how bad the bullpen is in the White Sox, and I was like, "Yeah, the Cubs are not much better, but it's the same ballpark there. This is bad bullpens in this city." But you've seen some solid starts by their starting pitching, and you still have Yoan Moncada just raking.
Which I think is one of the main reasons Sox fans are watching that, and Eloy Jimenez, who is hitting the ball and better, and he's hit his first 2 home runs, which were not cheapies whatsoever. So those are 2 real big positives right there.
Yeah, and he's batting just shy of 290 right now, Eloy. And Moncada is still batting well over 300. I mean, that torrid sense of the home runs is not there. The OPS has dropped under a 1,000, but he's still hitting really well. And Tim Anderson still batting 430.
Yeah, Tim Anderson's doing a lot of good things. Now, the 700 plus BABIP is not going to be sustainable, but it's still a sign that he's putting the ball in play and he's doing good things. So no matter how you spin it, he's playing really damn well and he's seeing the ball very well.
You can't be mad at anything Tim Anderson is doing this year.
Not at all. Not at all.
Like, he's playing phenomenally well. The bat is a lot better. You worried some last year what you were going to get from him. But it's everything that you've needed from him. He's looked fantastic.
He's made a lot of nice defensive plays.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy that went from a career batting average of 263 to he's batting 430. last year he hit 20 home runs in the whole season. He's already got 3.
That's pretty impressive.
So, that's you're getting solid work out of him. Yeah, his career average is expanded over a 162 game season is 19 home runs, and he's at 3 right now in like 50 at bats.
Good for him. I mean, he's one of the guys that was kind of once the center of the rebuild, but since they made the trades has kind of gone down, because you remember before they made the trades after the 2016 season, Tim Anderson was really kind of their one big prospect. But, you know, since they've made the trades and they've gotten Yoan and Jimenez and they've signed Louis Roberts, obviously kind of his relevancy, it didn't go away, but it kind of went down on the charts.
Yeah, he was the forgotten man, but he's the veteran. He's the Anthony Rizzo of this team, where he's the young veteran.
Yeah. I mean,
the play wise, you can't compare, but as far as the standing in the rebuild process, he would be the Anthony Rizzo, where he's very young, but he's the veteran amongst, the younger players. So,
they're the more, he's got the leadership of Rizzo, but like, he's like the better Starlin Castro that actually fits with the team. Because remember, Castro was part of the old regime and the pre-rebuild, and then you went into the rebuild, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and Tim Anderson right now is on pace for 35 home runs.
Yeah, there you go.
Nice. So, I mean, if you're a White Sox fan, you can't be, I mean, sure, your standings, you're the same record as the Cubs, I believe, but standings wise, you know, it's, what did you expect? But you're seeing the culmination of young players coming of age, and you're seeing a lot of good things. How can you not be excited when you're watching Tim Anderson play like he is, Yoan Moncada play like he is, Eloy Jimenez coming up and playing like he is? You're getting some nice starts from your starting pitching. Like, you just beat the Yankees, who a lot of people were picking to be the division champ in that division. And it's there's so many promising things that you didn't have the last several years.
For sure. And I know it's still a little difficult to watch when a lot of the pitchers right now aren't pitching well, but a lot of the guys that aren't pitching well probably aren't going to be on the team when they're good. You're not going to have Irvin Santana making spot starts and filling in. You're not going to have Ivan Nova, though Ivan Nova's been pretty good overall. He's not going to be around. A lot of those bullpen guys aren't going to be around. You're probably not going to have Adam Engel and Daniel Palka or Yolmer Sanchez still be on the team, because they've been struggling so far. But you're going to see a lot of changes, and just take the good for what it is.
And build, yeah, absolutely. Off it. Enjoy the positives. Your star is absolutely rising on the south side.
For sure.
Is there anything else you wanted to talk about?
Last thing I just wanted to mention: the Tampa Bay Lightning are about to be down 3-0 to the Columbus Blue Jackets in 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Yay!
I miss the Hawks in the playoffs, and it sickens me knowing that the Blues are probably going to win it.
I hope not.
I hope not either, but they just look unstoppable right now.
Yeah. Oh, well. I'm just hoping for a Canadian team to be in it. Come on, Canada.
Yeah, seriously.
But I think that's going to do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. I want to thank everyone so much for listening. Please hit subscribe however you listen to podcasts, whether that's iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, or the TuneIn app. Follow us on social media. At ChiFanPat1, at Swirsky Sports, Facebook.com/Swirsky Sports, SwirskySports.com, and share the podcast with anybody that listens to Chicago sports, watches Chicago sports, because that is how we grow the show. So thank you guys so much for listening. And until next time, bear down.
They have provided.
Cubs win.
Cubs win! Cubs win!
Oh, I don't want her. You can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van. And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on the plains.
Bears, 31 to negative 7.
The Bears!
Oh, when the Bears go bearing...